fairy, sugar bun fairy.
I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester, and sitting next to me virtually, of course, is John Anilio. And when we come together each week and virtually bump our fists, we form the Functional Nerds. This is episode number 188. And John.
Yes.
How's it going?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can follow him on Twitter at ATFMB, and you can check out his website, ATFMB.com. My name is John Anilio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at JohnAnilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. And we are very excited today to have Elizabeth Baer on the program. Elizabeth was born on the same day as Frodo and Bilbo Baggins, but in a different year. When coupled with a childhood tendency to read the dictionary for fun, my wife did the same thing. This led her inevitably to punitive intransigence and the writing of speculative fiction. She's the Hugo, Sturgeon, Locus, and Campbell award-winning author of 25 novels and almost 100 short stories. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us today.
I am thrilled to be here.
I'm really excited. I don't know if I would have ever asked you to be on the show because I kind of thought you were too big for our show, but your publicist, who I've become good friends with over the past couple months, was like, would you like to have Elizabeth Baer on the show? And I was like, yes. Yes, we would. So thank you to Artie for setting this up, and we're delighted to have you on, so thank you for coming on.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm glad we could make it work since there was a certain amount of scheduling and rescheduling and crisis management involved in getting me over here.
Yeah, we're used to that, so that's okay.
Hey, I have a question for Elizabeth. How is Scott?
Scott is currently typing away in the other room.
Nice.
So he's quite well.
I get to meet him for the first time at WorldCon in San Antonio, and he was a super nice guy.
Today is the fundraiser for his fire department. He's a on-call firefighter, and so he's been busy postering, and which he runs this thing. It's a chili cook-off, and he's been busily postering everything. So he's been getting his exercise.
Nice. Anyway, sorry, John.
Oh, no, it's okay. And I'll apologize to our listeners if you hear me crapping out here and there. Patrick will clean much of that up in editing, but I'm having a bad internet day. So, you know. No, I'm always very impressed with the masterful editing job that you do. And Elizabeth does a podcast herself, so I'm sure she is well aware of technical glitches and editing and that kind of thing. So
those things never happen.
Oh, yeah. No, we use Skype, so we get echo and dropout. And
we're a little bit more strict now than we used to be. A lot of times I won't let people use headsets, for example. Mm-hmm. hint but it depends on the headset, actually. When people go out and they buy the cheapest little headset they can possibly find, it just, you know, it makes them sound like this, and then it's a horrible audio quality. You know, I'm a little bit more strict nowadays, even with my Skype stuff. And one of the rules, like, I don't let people type. I make them wear headphones so that there's no echo, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So, but I feel your pain.
The headphones is the biggest solvable problem. And I know there's some people that like refuse to wear them still. Anyway,
well, yeah. And the explanation is if you wear headphones, then the sound is not coming through your speakers and therefore isn't feeding back into the microphone. That's what causes the echo in the first place. A lot of people use laptops. A lot of people use the Macs. And as much as I love a Mac, the speakers and the headphones, or the speakers and the mic, are so close that they do feed back into each other. So
Definitely. Well, Elizabeth, you know, before we, you know, all this hot tech talk on running podcasts that I'm sure our listeners are really enjoying.
Hey, we could do a whole segment on podcasting, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, we should definitely get into that a little bit, because that's something that you've been doing for a long time as well. But we should absolutely mention your new book out, which is the third book in your trilogy, which I know, you know, we're pretty plugged into the science fiction and fantasy community, and people have been raving about these books for, well, since they've been put out. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about, you know, just a sketch of the series as well, because one of the articles that I read this week was the post that you wrote for Chuck Wendig's blog, where you were like, I'm here to sell you a book, and not only am I here to sell you one book, I'm here to sell you three books. So maybe tell us a little bit about the three books that are now all out.
Excellent. Well, I'm totally here to sell you a book, or three books, as the case may be. The Eternal Sky books, they arose from a conversation that I had with a very good friend of mine who happens to be of Indian descent. And she and I, the running gag is that she and I are probably distant cousins, because I'm a Cossack on my paternal great-grandfather's side, and she's a direct male line descendant of Genghis Khan. And the Cossacks also have a strong Mongol influence behind them. So and being of Indian descent and a giant nerd, she has a hard time finding books that reflect her cultural traditions. And I thought it would be, I wanted to write her a book, basically. Mm-hmm. And sort of write us a book. Oh, I know. I mean, she's a really good friend.
That's awesome.
her name is Asha Srinivasan Shipman, and the first book in the series, Range of Ghosts, is actually dedicated to her two sons. And I have my generation of science fiction writers, as you've probably noticed, is the most diverse in terms of gender, in terms of ethnicity, in terms of religious background. And I think that what's going on right now is flowering of new perspectives in the genre, which I think is beautiful and much needed and absolutely amazing. So I guess this is in some ways what my friend Paul calls a Silk Road fantasy, which basically means that it takes place not in generic medieval Europe,
right,
as it were, but in a world where the cultures and civilizations and various empires and magic systems are based on Central Asia and Mediterranean, North African cultures. So, and it, I just had so much fun writing these, and actually I'm going to get to write three more, which will be... Yeah, the Tor has made an offer on three more Eternal Sky books, which will be set in a more Indian-inspired part of the world.
So what went into the research on that? I mean, did you have to spend a lot of time researching the different cultures that you wanted to add?
Yeah, yes. I want to make it very plain that this isn't in any way historical fantasy,
sure,
that this is not our world, that I make absolutely no pretense that the Khersonic horse tribes that are one of the central cultures in these books are inspired by historical Mongolians, mm-hmm, and Genghis Khan and so forth and so on. But there, I am making no pretense of accuracy or ethnography or any kind of, it's a fantasy.
You just wanted
it's
the flavor.
It's a made up world.
You wanted the flavor.
I wanted to reflect something other than generic 11th century Europe.
Sure.
Basically.
Cool. And so the book one is Range of Ghosts. And then the new book is out now is, I don't know how to pronounce that.
Astelias of the Sky.
Cool.
Astelias is a kind of an obelisk.
Oh, okay. Cool. Very good. Yeah.
The Kurgan people used them. Those Kurgans, like Highlander Kurgans.
There can be only one. I've got
there
something to say.
Only one.
It's better to burn out than to fade away.
I got it started, didn't I?
Yeah.
But at least I didn't go.
At least you didn't do that.
At least I didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, very good. So people, all three books are currently out right now, and then people can expect the ones. Is there a release date of the first? I know you just talked about the new three that are going to be coming out. Is there a release date for the first one yet?
Yeah, the first one should probably be coming out in 2017. It's not written yet, and I have an unrelated book coming out from that publisher next year, Karen Emery, which is a steampunk, Wild West, heroic hookers of alternate Pacific Northwest logging town book. And then Sarah Monette and I are working on the long-delayed third book in the Ice Crine, which is, or Iskrina, to give it the correct pronunciation, which I never do. Old Norse, very complicated. the book that my boyfriend, Scott Lynch, refers to as The Republic of Elves. It's now 3 years overdue. So that will hopefully be my 2016 publication for Tor.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good. All right. Well, let us get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And I will go first just because now I'm thinking about it from what Elizabeth was describing. I just started watching it this past week. I watched about the first four or five episodes of it. It's up on Amazon's Prime's video streaming service. And that is The Legend of Korra, which is the sort of follow up to the last the Avatar Last Airbender cartoon from a few years ago. Yeah, I'm only four episodes in season one, and I remember people really loved season one. I remember seeing some negative stuff about season two. Someone I was reading online didn't love a lot of it. I don't know if season two dropped off or I don't really know, but I'm digging the first couple of episodes so far, and kind of like what Elizabeth was talking about, this takes place, I guess it's about 100 or so years after the events of the original series. So I love that. You know, there's like a big statue of Aang that is like in the city that they're in. And
as an adult.
Yes, as an adult, like after all of his adventures and everything. And I'm really enjoying. I still point that out as one of my favorite things. Just a excellent example of telling a one big long story through the animated format. And I love Avatar, and I'm loving this so far. So if you haven't seen it yet, and you do have the Amazon Prime instant streaming video stuff, the season one is up on Prime right now. I think season two is there, but you have to pay for it.
It's called Book One.
Yeah. Yes, Book One. Right. So that is my pick for this week. Elizabeth, do you have a pick for the week?
I do. Not strictly science fiction, but it's not really. Karen Joy Fowler's 2013 novel, We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves, which is amazing. I just finished it a couple of weeks ago, and I was completely blown away by this book. I think Karen is one of our best writers. She sort of straddles that line of genre literary fiction. But this particular story is about and I don't want to spoil it, but it's about a young girl who is the daughter of an academic psychologist whose entire childhood is basically a child-rearing experiment. And the fallout from that. The fallout from growing up as, you know, the subject of a science fictional experiment. Mm-hmm. The voice is wonderful. The character is wonderful. The way the story is structured with its little mysteries that sort of hook you along. I was listening to it on an audiobook, and it was one of those audiobooks where I found myself taking extra walks. You know, like the dog got a lot of exercise that week because. Because I listen to audiobooks usually when I'm walking the dog, and fantastic. I think it's nominated for a Nebula.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, excellent. Highly recommended.
Give the title and author one more time so our listeners can check it out.
Here, Karen Joy Fowler. We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves.
That's a fantastic title too. Yeah, very good, very good. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Have you ever heard the term comfort food?
Of course.
Yeah.
So I think there's also there's just these things that you tend to go back to because it makes you feel like, you know, you're home again, and it's like a comfort food. And music can be one of these things. There's also different kinds of mediums that can be for me. And recently I have been watching Star Trek the Animated Series on Netflix.
Mm. Oh my God.
And I don't have a memory of watching these before, because they were on when I was little, but they're so well done, and they got the majority of the original cast to come back and do the voices. They were done in the 70s, and they're just really well done. I mean, a lot of the original writers were on there. I just saw Yesteryear, which was DC Fontana wrote that, and you know, she was credited with partly credited with creating the Vulcans and the Romulans. Diane Duane was another one who's kind of partly credited with that, and just watching that, it's like going back and seeing all your family again, because these are people you grew up with, you knew them, they were friends and family, you know the characters inside and out, and it's so cool to kind of go back and be there again. It's like comfort food. And so Star Trek the Animated Series on Netflix, that's my pick this week.
Awesome. You know, James Blish did a bunch of the novelizations. Yes. Of those.
I have them. I have them all.
I loved those when I was a kid. I mean, I barely remember. There was a cat person.
Yes, there was. She sits in for Uhura. And I believe the voice of that cat person was Majel Barrett. I'm not 100% sure. It sounds like her.
But she's all the voices.
Yes, it sounds like her. And there is an episode where they all get hit by like a it's almost like a love spell kind of thing, and she starts thinking that Scotty is very attractive, and Scotty starts thinking she's very attractive, and you never know what's going to happen there. Don't know if he's got enough power, but yeah.
Cool. That's a really good patch. Cool.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, really well done. So well worth the time.
Cool. All right. Well, you know, Elizabeth, I want to get right back into what we were talking about before we did our picks. We were talking about that article that you wrote for Chuck Wendig's blog. And one of the things that you said, which really made me laugh and I thought was a great inspiration for writing, was that you made a boast. About how, you know, with epic fantasy that, like, you know what? I can do an epic fantasy series, and I can keep it to the books that I want to say it's going to be, and I can keep it to page count. And so, because obviously that's a big thing in our community with epic fantasy, with it goes, starts at 3 books and ends up 10 books.
I don't understand the problem. I mean, Robert Jordan set out to do a 15 book series. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about the story about your boast and how you ultimately met your boast. So
nearly. I came close. It is, as you point out, it's a running joke in the industry of the, you know, 17 book trilogy. Mm-hmm. Authors are like everybody else. Sometimes we trash talk a little bit. And I made what I refer to now as an ill-advised boast to some of my writer friends that, God damn it, I could write an epic fantasy and I could keep it to 3 books. And somebody else was like, yeah, it wouldn't be very epic then, would it? And I'm like, it's called discipline. And, you know? So I made the, as I said, ill-advised boast that I would write an epic fantasy trilogy. It would be 3 books. They would all be delivered on time. God damn it. Oh, Scott's going to come out of the other room and kill me. and that they would be, that I would keep them to the contracted length. And I very nearly accomplished this. I did, the third book ran a little bit long, 100 pages long. And I technically handed it in on time, which is I got it in, I think, 78 hours before the absolute drop dead date when we would have had to move the publication. But so by the skin of my teeth, with my editor, you know, staying up all night waiting for me to get back to her. My poor editor, my poor long-suffering editor.
Who's your editor? I'm just curious.
Beth Meacham.
Oh, nice. Okay. One of the things that I'm trying to do, and I apologize for interrupting you, but one of the things I'm trying to do is know the editors so that when it comes time to vote in Hugo's and other awards, see, the editors don't always get out there, and so I don't know what they've done. So I'm making a point of asking authors who their editors were for specific books. So thank you for that.
Yes. And Beth has been great. As I've mentioned a couple of other places, she's an accomplished horsewoman. Mm. And obviously, writing a book inspired by Mongol horse cultures. I have a little bit of experience with horses. I worked in a stable when I was in college, and I've known a few horses, but it's not the same as really having that background and being somebody who rides every day and has their own horses. And so she was she fixed all of my stupid horse mistakes.
Now, what I'm curious about, when you say that she's a horsewoman, you're not admitting that the publishing industry is ripe with centaurs.
It is, actually. Centaurs with cloaking devices.
Yes.
What I was going to mention too is with the horse stuff, with in terms of writers, that's something that certain readers obviously are very sensitive about. Like if you mess up horse stuff, they get on you. Like I've read a lot of things where people are like, oh, they never rode a horse in their life and they don't know anything about it and they were calling it this when it's this. And so it's like, you have to be, I think if you're going to write any sort of fantasy where there's horses involved, you have to do your homework because there is a contingent of people who will call you on it if you don't get it right.
Horses, guns, and motorcycles.
Yes.
And the best thing is because I have people who check my gun stuff too. Mm-hmm. And I also have friends who will do my physics for me, you know, when I'm writing science fiction, which is actually really useful because when somebody emails me irate about something I said about guns or physics or horses, I do the, well, why don't you and him fight thing? And, you know, people who are really into something love to have nerd arguments about it.
Mm-hmm. So. And John, just so you understand from the writer's standpoint, as far as fantasy goes, there's really a very small list of things that people nerd rage about. Horses, the military structure, the swords and weapons, the battles, the castles, the landscapes, the maps, the words on the pages, the number of pages. I mean, it's a really short list. There's only about 600 more items on it that people nerd rage about. So, I mean, it's not that big a deal.
Well, I'm a musician, so I do notice when there's music in a book, and I notice what most authors do if they're not musicians themselves, and if they include music, they just tend to be pretty vague about it, which I think is probably the way to go. Like if you don't know that much about it, just mention what you have to and move on. And I think that's fine. I did read one book once where they misused tempo for, you know, for dynamics, they meant like the tempo was getting louder, and it's like tempo is fast and slow. It's not loud and soft. And I was like, that would have been an easy Wikipedia check. You should have done anyway. So that was the only time I ever read music.
That's the copy editor falling down on the job there too.
Yeah. That's something that should have been noticed. I think that was the one time where I was like, they don't understand music, and I got really mad.
But I get the same way about archery. You know, it's I try not to do it. But, you know, there are certain moments where I'm like, bows don't work that way.
did you happen to see, Elizabeth, when the Avengers came out, there was a contributor for Wired who did an entire post complaining about Hawkeye's use of a bow and how he was using it and just went through and showed and like did actual screenshots of himself holding bows and firing and doing all this stuff to show where they got it all wrong because he was just so nerd enraged over it.
I see. I'm a little mellower than that. I was just happy that he actually ran out of arrows. I mean, there's a little verisimilitude to, you know, obviously he needs to get Legolas's quiver.
I think it's one of the little lesser known things about the Lord of the Rings is Legolas did have a quiver of holding. No, nothing. Okay.
I thought it was one of those machine feed quivers with the bandolier arrows.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Yeah. That would be kind of awesome, actually.
I can see Robert Rodriguez making that movie now.
Yes.
So Elizabeth, with now, so this trilogy is now done. Yes. So this is sort of the completion of your boast. So, but now you mentioned that you're going to be writing three more books, but these other three books are just going to be a completely separate
story.
They're in the same world, but they're a different story. So this is not necessarily a continuation of the same story.
Yes. I'm totally stealing Ray Feist's tactic, and I'm going to try to tell a completely different story with completely different characters. There might be one or two continuing characters or one or two characters who from the first trilogy who wander through and have a cameo in the second trilogy.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
But the protagonists of this particular story are two characters who debuted in a story that I wrote for Jonathan Strahan's Fearsome Journeys anthology, which was out last year. They are a sort of mirror-faced, sorcerously animated metal golem and a masterless warrior, a former bodyguard who no longer has a job. It's at least going to start out with a sort of Fafford and the Grey Mouse or road movie through the Alterna Himalayas and rapidly turn into a miserable political fight. So.
Cool. You know, the other another question I wanted to ask is one of the other articles that I read this week that you wrote as a guest post over for SF Signal for Sarah's Special Needs in a Strange World. You wrote your piece about disabled characters in science fiction and fantasy, and I think you hit on a lot of really interesting points in that article. And one of the things you'd mentioned, because you had said that you were hesitant to write it, but then you realized, like, oh, wait a minute, I guess I have written characters like this before. But the reason why you hesitated is because you never thought of them as being, you just thought of them as other characters in your work. And you mentioned, one of the things that you mentioned that I certainly appreciated, I have a 7-year-old son who's autistic, so these are issues that are always very, that I think about a lot too, is that one of the worst things that you feel an author can do with a character with some sort of disability is have them there to be cured or saved or healed or something. It's like sort of a crutch, and you're like, that's sort of the worst thing you can do as an author. And I love the fact that you wrote that. It's like, nope, these are people who are just like anybody else that have their own thing, you know, their own needs, their own journey that they're going on themselves. And, I wanted to ask you, like, so when you're thinking about these different characters that you're writing, what gave you sort of that mentality about it, that it's like, oh no, they're not someone to be fixed. They're just like everybody else.
But some of it is just listening to friends I have who are, identity politics is not really my thing, partially because I grew up in a household that was very focused on identity politics, and I developed an early allergy to it. You know how the things that you're exposed to when you're a child, you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Like Hank Williams Jr.
Yes. So I developed an early allergy to certain aspects of identity politics for myself. I have a lot of friends, however, who are activists in various communities. Mm. And one of the things that I consistently hear as being frustrating is not... The turn of phrase we often use as writers is granting a character agency, which seems like an odd way to phrase that. Mm-hmm. If you don't grant a character agency. A character has to have agency. If you're granting it to them, then it's not really agency. And the realization for myself as an artist, and as I've developed in my craft, I like to think I've developed in my craft anyway, that all characters have agency. Every single person in your story exists to live their own life, not to fulfill the narrative arc or in service to whatever noble fate you have in mind for your protagonist. Everybody's the hero of their own movie. Everybody's there for a reason. And one of the things that is also important to me is the realization that there are a lot of people who have some kind of a disability, whether it's you know, neurochemical or physical or congenital or, you know, whatever. And frankly, hopefully we all live long enough, you know, everybody's only temporarily abled. It's going to come for all of us sooner or later. Mm-hmm. But and some people consider their quote unquote disability part of their identity. Yeah, there's a deaf community of people who consider it a cultural focus. And there are also people who have deafness who would much prefer to be hearing people. Mm-hmm. And I think also it's important to remember that construction, even if you don't always use it, but, you know, it's not, you're not, if you are a person with a hearing-related disability, you're not so much a deaf person. It's not your entire identity. You are a person who has the limitation of deafness. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, being raised in this community that focused very much on what we would call today political correctness. And I don't mean that in a pejorative sense at all. The just sort of that awareness that everybody has their own narrative got, I think, inculcated in me very early.
Mm. Mm. Well, I certainly appreciated reading that because it's something, because not only is it with my son, but I'm a teacher too, and I deal with kids with all sorts of disabilities, but a lot on the autism spectrum, but just kids with physical disabilities as well. And when you work with a big majority of people, my wife is a psychologist, and she works in mental health with a much older population, and you do just realize that we tend to, as a society, put people in the, that's what autistic people are like, and this is mm-hmm. what these people are like, and you realize very quickly when you work with people is that everybody is so different. Like, everybody is really quite individual. Like, even within, you know, obviously I know quite a bit about autism because it's been a big part of my life for a while now, but I deal with so many kids that they're what we would call strengths or weaknesses are so different. Like, you cannot say it's one person. So they're just living their life and they're doing what they do, and you can't just put them in a box because they're not going to fit there at all. And yeah. and I think that's speaks to your point of every character having their own agency, because it's, you can't have the, oh, here's the disabled character that the hero is going to save at some point because I need someone for the hero to save. It's like, nope, they're going to go on their own mission and their own journey as well. So, mm-hmm. so kudos to you for that. I really quite enjoyed that article. So thank you for writing it, but I'm sorry. I'm about to cut you off there.
No, it's okay.
Okay. Well, we're almost out of time. So, Patrick, did you have anything in particular you wanted to ask Elizabeth before we started wrapping up here?
No, I already asked her my questions.
Okay, very good. Well, so Elizabeth, so obviously you have the three books out now, the boastful trilogy that you that's going to have that wraparound sticker when they all get in paperback. It'll be Elizabeth Baer's Boastful Trilogy.
There you go. Yeah, I like that. The Boastful Trilogy.
Yeah. But that is out now for people to pick up, and that is through Tor. And please let us know, please let our listeners know your website, your Twitter, upcoming con appearances, other books that you have that they should check out.
Well, I have we'll do the upcoming books thing first. I have a novel coming out from a small press, Prime Books, in either August or September, I'm not sure exactly of the publication date, called One-Eyed Jack, which is an urban fantasy set in Las Vegas in 1964 and 2002, sort of simultaneously for reasons that will become clear. my Twitter handle, I am Matto Sikuala everywhere on the internets, and that's spelled MattoSikuala. That's Twitter, LiveJournal, Google Plus, pretty much everywhere. And my website is elizabethbaer.com, so that's very easy to find.
Hey, John, I did remember a question for Elizabeth.
Okay.
I was wondering how much longer she's going to be taking care of my Dark Crystal poster on the wall behind her. If she needs me to send her a box to go ahead and ship that back to me.
Well, it's Scott Lynch's Dark Crystal poster, dang, so you're going to have to fight him for it.
Dang.
As I said, I will film this.
Well, maybe we could do a big charity event and have a wrestling match between Scott Lynch and...
I like it. Klingon blood pudding.
Yes.
Wrestling.
Anyway, that was my thing, John. Sorry. Go ahead.
How about upcoming con appearances? Any cons that you're going to be at that people can check out?
I'm going to be at every convention in the Western world this year.
Wow.
Let's see. I'm going to be at MiniCon next weekend. The weekend after that, I'm going to be at MiniCon is in Minneapolis. Obviously. I'm going to be at RavenCon the weekend after that, which is in Baltimore. Then I'm going to be at MoCon the weekend after that.
Maurice!
Maurice Brodus, the awesome.
Yes.
Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a signing at Pandemonium Books in Cambridge, Massachusetts on May 8th. I'm doing a signing at Annie's Bookstop in Worcester, Massachusetts on May 10th. And then over the summer, I am at 4th Street Fantasy Convention, Convergence, FinCon, which is in Jyväskylä, which I just horribly mispronounced, in Finland, Nine Worlds, and LunCon, which is the WorldCon in London, and some other stuff in the autumn, but that's enough for now.
Mile High Con?
I'm not doing Mile High Con. I'm sorry.
Okay, fine.
All right. Well, that's great. Thank you, Elizabeth. That's so everybody, she's coming to a town near you. You got to go see her. Well, thanks much. For me this week, like I said last time, I'm going to be doing the musical score for Zero Complex, which is a web series that is running a Kickstarter right now. There's a lot of great acting talent in it, people that have worked in the Mass Effect franchise and some other named folks, and I'm very excited to be a part of that. So that is, you can either just follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. I'm sure I'll be tweeting about that, but if you just go to Kickstarter and look Zero Complex, you'll find the producers of that film / web series that is coming out. So Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Well, as this episode airs on this weekend, I will be at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference, and I am on faculty there. I'm doing podcasting. I'm doing interviews. I will be doing a Scrivener Q&A for Delve Writing as part of that. I don't think I'm hosting a table, but at least one, because they do food as part of the conference, and so different people on faculty are supposed to host tables and have like people come and sit with them and everything. And I'm not doing that, but I am apparently assigned to Chuck Wendig at one of those tables. So I'm totally
so
going to start a food fight. Yes, I'm totally going to start a food fight. So yeah, April 25th, 6th, and 7th in Colorado Springs, Pikes Peak Writers Conference. So I encourage everyone to come who is in the area and check it out. There's also a bar con. So if you don't want to pay for the conference, you just want to come and get drunk with a bunch of authors. I know it's out of character. Authors don't normally drink, but they're making an exception for this particular conference. They're going to try alcohol for the first time. So come and join us for that. Other than that, hfmb.com. I post a day for the entire month of April. Kirkus Reviews, you name it, I do it. So just go and look for me online. I am all things from my brain, ATFMB.
Very good. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time. Bye.
Kings, we're the princes of and smoke.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.